Food & Wine magazine called Michter's the best American whiskey. And Michter's is the first American whiskey to be selected as Whiskey of the Year by Whiskey Exchange. Michter's, it's all about the whiskey. Welcome to In the Drink with Joe Campanelli. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. When I'm not hosting In the Drink, you can find me at Fausto, where I'm the owner and wine director, or our new wine bar, Lalu. I also work on a wine project in Italy called Annona. For today's episode, I sit down here at Fausto in the wine cellar with Jeff Porter. Jeff was the wine director of the Batali Bassianich restaurant group and is now working on Sip Trip. Sip Trip is a web-based series that Jeff produces and hosts, due to come out this fall. This is sort of Jeff's brainchild, and it's a combination of comedians in cars getting coffee and no reservations. Jeff takes viewers around the Italian wine country, introducing them to the grapes and the people behind some really delicious wines. Welcome to In the Drink. Welcome
Thank you back, very much Jeff for Porter. Me.
It's great to have you. You've been a busy guy lately. You used to be the wine director for the Batali Bassianich group, especially the concepts up here in the Northeast. And when did you leave that?
I left January 4th, 2019.
So recently.
Right, this year.
But I know you've been busy since then. We're working on a delicious wine project called Igni, which you can find here at Fausto.
Thank you.
You're doing some consulting, and I really want to talk to you today about Sip Trip, but maybe let's save that for the end. Let's talk about the other things first.
So I thought in my retirement, which is when I left BBHG, all my psalms were like, oh, hey, old man, good job retiring. And I thought, I honestly did think my life, I'd have less emails and working in the restaurant industry. I always feel like it's 24/7, specifically when you have a lot of restaurants or you're an operator. It's just emails are coming all the time. The restaurants never close.
How many restaurants were you working with at that time?
At the height, it was 12.
Wow.
Which was a lot. But it was an unbelievable, undeniable, amazing experience to work with the chefs, the GMs, and specifically the SOM teams. And the coolest thing was just watching people grow, because I'd had, when I came to New York in 2011, I came in early part of the year in 2011. By the end of the year, I'd hired this one guy named Joe Cuvo, and he had come from culinary school, and he had, like, I'll never forget, he came to the restaurant and he was like, you know, I want to work here. And we didn't really have a position. So we had this position in our head called the wine runner, which is a tough position. It's a, you know, in fancy restaurants, they call it a commis or something. The person that basically runs to get bottles of wine and literally stocks all the wine. And a place like Del Posto, I mean, it's like 50, 70 cases a day worth of wine. It's just ridiculous how much wine is moved there. And today he's the head somm, and he's arguably one of the best unknown talents in Italian wine in the United States. The guy is deep, deep into understanding Italian culture, Italian wine. He speaks Italian fluently now. He ended up living with an Italian captain at the restaurant. It's amazing to see. And like another guy who started with us, Luke Bolin, who worked at Eataly and I was at Eataly, he came up to me. He's like, I'll do anything. And so we hired him as, when Joe got promoted, he replaced Joe. And now he's running Crown Shy. And he had worked at the pool and the grill and done all those things. And that's the thing that makes me most excited, is to see people's growth. And
I just saw him at Crown Shy last week, had an outstanding meal. And that wine list is fantastic.
It's awesome. And he kept to this idea that I think a lot of the somms who've worked in our group, the thing that we always pushed was like value. People open the wine list at Del Posto and be like, oh, F you, Jeff. It's only like 4 digits and 3 digits. And it's not. We pride ourselves to find, you know, $50 and up. And Luke, he's taking that to extremes. Like anybody can go there and find a wine to get excited about. Anybody. And that's the beauty of, that's what we're supposed to do.
Was mentorship a big part of what you did in that position?
I tried. I mean, you'd have to ask them. I sometimes think of myself, I mean, I want to be thought of as a mentor, but I saw it more as a teamwork and, you know, somewhat sometimes like a coach or like the quarterback kind of mentalities, where you know, I was a lineman when I played football. So it's like, but I was like the head lineman. So I'd like gather linemen up and be like, okay, guys, we've got to do this. We got to protect our team. And that's kind of how I saw like the chef's really the quarterback. And our job was to just go out there and proselytize and block and tackle and make sure the guests are getting what they need.
You see, I see it in your face. I know our listeners can't see it, but you can just like get really excited about these people who you worked with who are growing in their careers and doing more fun and exciting and new things. Do you miss that aspect?
Absolutely. I mean, they define me. I mean, that's all the hard work that you put in, and then you work with all these people, and you've done it throughout your career, all the acolytes you've had that have followed you and done really cool things. It's just, it's like being a parent, and then they teach you things. That's the coolest thing. And like, hey, Jeff, they'll text you, have you tried this wine? You got to check it out. And I just love it. And it builds this big community. And I don't know, that's a cool thing about consulting now is like, I'm consulting at Hometown Barbecue and Red Hook Tavern with Billy Durney and his team. And the GM, head wine guy at Red Hook Tavern, worked for me at Lupa. And he started as a bartender, then became a part-time somm, then a floor somm, then the head somm. And then, you know, sorry, I poached him. And to see his growth and his understanding of not just wine itself, but hospitality and business and how the restaurant industry works, that's the greatest thing I get out of the whole thing. I love seeing these people grow.
That's cool. And I also had an outstanding meal recently at Red Hook Tavern. I've been eating out pretty well. What a cool wine list you put together. And there's so many wines they just want to drink on there that maybe are hard to find or are allocated or just delicious.
It's the proudest list I've ever been a part of. I mean, I love all the work I've done at all the restaurants I've been at, but this was from ground zero. And working with Billy. And the cool thing is to have an owner that's so passionate about wine. And he literally sat with me. And we taste every wine on that wine list we've tasted.
That's awesome.
Together.
That he's tasted it too.
Yeah, the owner's tasted it. And he's a professed neophyte. He knows way more about wine than he'll let on. But like he's only in the past 5 years, it's a whole new world to him. But he's the best thing about Billy, and you can taste it at Hometown, is like, you know, a guy was in the security business, fell in love with open fire cooking, and then became arguably one of the nation's greatest at it. And then he fell in love with wine, and he can span the gamut across all sorts of wines. And that's what was cool about that wine list. And it wasn't just Italian.
Yeah, we drank some Domaine Chappelle.
Aligoté.
Yeah, delicious.
So good.
It's hard to, first vintage maybe.
Yeah.
Really good. Yeah, I have a lot of pride that he is in Brooklyn too. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that you guys, two good people, are working together. That we have like this outstanding barbecue there.
It's fun not to have to go into Manhattan every day.
Right. And you're a Brooklyn resident,
yeah,
right?
I walked here. I live down the street and it's awesome.
I'm just thinking about you as the, you know, wine director for these 12 restaurants that doing some major sales. You're probably one of the most important Italian wine buyers. I'm probably the most important Italian wine buyer in terms of quality wine in the country at that time. And there's a lot of power that comes with that, right? You have winemakers want to suck up to you, want to be on your list, and distributors. And do you miss that sort of power that comes with being this, you know, influential buyer?
I was always afraid of the power. And I always was afraid that people thought I was an asshole if I said no a lot or if I didn't get back to emails fast enough. I was just a personal flaw is like just trying to be a people pleaser all the time, which was good in hospitality. The guests liked it because I was like very concerned for them. And I was concerned for the partnership that I had. I mean, my biggest fear when I left the job was learning who my real friends were. And that was really scary. And like, because I'd, you know, been in the position 9 years, and it's a long time in the wine industry and a long time with these relationships and people I would hang out with professionally, but I thought they were my friends, and you know, lo and behold, all of them are still my friends. So it was just this fear that was unfounded, but it was just like this person in my head being like, oh, they only like you because of what you did, not who you are. And I always think I tried to define what I did in my position as I was a caretaker or a curator, whatever you want to call it. The power wasn't in me. The power was in the position. And I always tried to teach my staff and with myself. And sometimes maybe I slipped, but I always tried to keep in my head, you have to be nice to everybody. Like when I hear of people like holding people over the rails for like not getting an allocation, I mean, there's tons of wine out there. I mean, BFD, who cares? You know, it may be disappointing for a little bit, but you'll get over it. I mean, there's no reason not to be nice to people. You know, I don't know. I think the thing I miss the most is just tasting wine every day. Not necessarily anything outside of that.
Did you taste wine every day? You
have like most of the day. Not like appointments, but like going around to the restaurants, we'd taste wines with the team or the staff or do wine education. Or, you know, you'd have samples that you'd have to burn through with a group of somms somewhere. So it was often.
Well, I mean, one of the things I was always impressed by is you never let that great power go to your head. I think you did a good job of that. And thanks. I know you always really empowered the people at each individual restaurant as well. I think you did just such a great job.
Well, I learned by fire on that one. Like, you know, when you leave being a single buyer at a restaurant in a place like Del Posto, and then you've got to oversee people, you know, it's hard to let go of control. But then you realize that if you don't let go of control, you will die. Like, you'll be so underwater, you can't keep up with the volume. And then you also won't be able to have the best people. So that's when I learned through my mistakes to step back and just be a guide, be a sounding board, sit with each of the wine directors and be like, okay, let's talk. And, you know, if I was super passionate about something, I'd be like, please. Or I just send it. I'd be like, hey, we're going to do this and that this is how it is, but like, trust me. And then you build that trust with people and they say the same thing and you're like, let's do it. And I think that's how you get the best people, you keep the best people, and you yourself get to grow and learn.
So when you left, did you have a plan as to what you were going to do?
Ish. For good or for bad, a lot of times I've been kind of shoot from the hip. Like Igni was an idea that I had that I didn't necessarily want to do, but I felt compelled because I loved Aglianico del Vulture. And I knew...
So Igni is a wine you make with Shelley Lindgren?
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't make. We're negociants. So we partner with people that make the wine. We partner with growers to highlight wines and regions we specifically like. So we've started out with one wine. The goal is to grow to like 6 or 7. All under the same idea of Igni, which is a play on the Latin root of ignis, which means fire, because all the wines are, it's like the four tenets. It has to be volcanic soil, native grape to wherever it is. It needs to be organically or biodynamically farmed, and it has to use native yeast and fermentation. Those are the things that we work with the growers. And some of the growers don't do it, and they kind of adapt in the process I'm trying to work with the other wines, but I decided I wanted to do this project because I wanted to get closer to understanding winemaking. I'd made wine in Napa Valley before. I did an associate's degree in viticulture when I lived in Napa Valley a long time ago. And I wanted to get back to it. And I wanted to learn more specifically with Italy. Like Ian Degatta with his Native Grapes of Italy had really inspired me to get down and dirty because his book is just so dense of information. When you read it, you really want to be like, oh, okay, I want to really understand this. And so I went to Shelley because I didn't want to do it alone because I was too scared. And she's an amazing, smart person that I knew has the same sort of passion for these things. And I was like, Shelley, what do you think? And she was like, yes. And for us, it's so funny because like I said, okay, on three, name the grape you want to do with first. And we were like, 1, 2, we were at Zuni Cafe, like 1, 2, 3. And we both said Aglianico. And I was like, okay, this is kismet. We're in. We're family. We've known each other for almost 20 years. Let's figure it out.
It's no surprise from Shelley because she's such an expert in the wines of the South. She named her restaurant A16 after the road down there. But why Aglianico for you?
So in 2009, I visited Vulture and I was walking the vineyards and there was all these old vines. And I could notice that like the disease pressure was low. So the ability to organic farming is pretty easy there. But the wines didn't compute to what I saw. Like old vines, high altitude. And I tried some like older school examples and like, oh wow, these are pretty. They're not super extracted. They're not heavily oaked. But the majority of what was coming to the market, especially in the United States, was like super oaky, super juicy, super extracted. And I was like, I feel like they're missing the point of their terroir. So our idea was to show the terroir off. I wanted to pick something super easy to sell, which is a joke because it's not. And it's unexpected because, you know, it's lighter in body, it's lower in alcohol, and it's high in acidity. But for me, that's what and in talking with the growers and the winemakers, you're seeing this movement towards that within the region too. So these younger people are taking over the wineries and kind of being like, damn the torpedoes, damn the old markets we have. Let's do what the terroir is telling us to do.
And did you think of Volturi before Campania? Did you have some producers in Volturi you had thought of, or you're just like, I just see a lot of potential here?
It was at first just Volturi. I was like, I love Tarazi, but I was just like, Volturi reminds me of Etna. I know there can be an elegance. And to be honest, I really enjoyed it with barbecue. And since I like making barbecue at home, I thought this would be it'd be fun to have some barbecue wine.
The only one who can compete with Bill Durney and barbecue in Brooklyn is you.
Thank
your barbecue is pretty outstanding. So what was the process like? How did you find the producers that you're working with?
So Shelley and I made a list of the producers we liked. And then both of us, our first one was Grifalco. And so we emailed them and said, hey, this is the idea. We're looking to maybe rent some vineyards, blah, 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 blah. And they were like, we love this idea. We love this project. Let's work together. And so they had some vineyards that they weren't using all the fruit. They were selling it off. And they said, we'd rather sell it to you guys. And that's how it happened. It was, it seems so simple. It was like, how can this go wrong? It's so. And so we worked with them. They sent us samples and it was kind of back and forth. It was kind of like, this is very akin to the Postal Service. You remember that band from the early 2000s? Ben Gibbard of Death Cab for Cutie and the producer dude that I can't remember his name. And they would mail back and forth the files of music. And then that's how they built the album. And so Shelley and I were mailing back samples of wine back and forth. And that's how we came up to the final blend. And also, I'd go to Italy, pick up the samples, fly them back here, send them to Shelley. We FaceTime. And our final blend, we had three samples. And we did them blind. And my whole family, so my daughter, who at the time was three, my wife and I on one end, Shelley, her two sons and her husband, all of us, including our children, tried the wine. And then we all voted on the blend we like. And all of us voted for the blend that came out.
That's amazing. And you said you have another one coming. Where's your next?
So we're working with Cristiano Garella from Alto Piemonte.
Yeah, the man.
He's doing a Croatina on the Lissona side. So Lissona is all volcanic. And so there's a Croatina that we're going to work with there. It's a super small production. So it'll kind of like what I'm looking to do with him too is find a Vespolina too from there. So in the spring have Vespolina, in the fall have Croatina. And then I'm working on a Suave. Again, volcanic soil.
Yeah.
And then a Nerello Mascalese.
You're staying away from Campania.
For now. We were trying to... Because
that's the only other place in Italy that I know of that might have volcanic soil.
Right? Lazio. I'm really interested in Cesenese.
I think is the place, or it will be. It's so exciting. There's so many cool things happening.
So we're kind of scouring around and trying to figure that one out.
So cool.
This season of In the Drink is brought to you by 750. 750 is the software for people just like me who are ordering tons of great wine, spirits, liquor, beer on a daily basis. One of the things I love about 750 is it really helps me simplify my ordering process across all of my distributors. I'm no longer crafting an email, waiting for them to get back to me. 750 simplifies it by allowing me to order right through the system. It helps me build more efficiency into my workday. And it's so easy to place repeat orders just by hitting the button. It's a really great service, and I'm so happy to have them sponsoring the season.
Okay, so you were leaving B&B. You knew you wanted to work on this, but as someone who makes some wine in Italy, Nona, it's very hard to make money, doing a ghost project with wine, unless you're going to scale it to be super big. But knowing the sort of quality that you do, my guess is that your idea is not for this to be 100,000 cases or
no. This is much more of a nonprofit venture at the moment. I mean, I'd like to make some money off of it, but it is definitely not a full-time job.
I totally understand that. So did you have some other ideas as to what you were going to do?
Sip Trips was in the works before I left. And so the idea of Sip Trip is that this is a decade-long process. And I originally had a blog that's defunct called Drink, Eat, Love. People like, why is my Instagram? Everything's named Drink, Eat, Love that I do. And that's what it was called. I stopped writing it when I moved here. And then blogs kind of died for the most part. And I tried to sell, when I lived in LA, I tried to sell like a wine education that was half cartoon, half live action. I met with producers and stuff like that. And they were like, that's a cute idea, but like wine's not cool enough yet. It's kind of boring. But I never gave up on the idea because I was like, I firmly believe there's a truly defined wine culture in the United States now. It's a wine culture based on consumption, learning, education, not necessarily like production, not the idea that we have like Italians have wine culture because they've made it for 1,000 years or whatnot. Maybe in California, they have a production wine culture, but it's still relatively new. And, you know, I am part of that wine consumer culture that consumes not just the product, but all the information and the lifestyle. And so over time, I kept kind of adapting the idea, never giving up, talking to people, trying to pitch it. And then I started watching Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, and I love comedy. I love the inside baseball aspect of it. And so I started thinking, I was like, oh, this is pretty neat. And then, of course, I love Parts Unknown and No Reservation and Fat Acid Salt Heat, which came out after this, but she's a big inspiration because I'd read the book. And there's Rick Steves is a huge part of my life. My dad is basically Rick Steves. He looks like Rick Steves. And all of our travels growing up were kind of, Rick Steves said this. We're going to go to this restaurant because Rick Steves said this. And I watched him incessantly on PBS. And so I finally met some people and I pitched the ideas. Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee meets Parts Unknown meets Rick Steves. And basically, the goal is for not to be a wine show. Wine is a character. So if you think of it as a wheel, like of a car, wine is the hub. But all the spokes are everything that keeps it together. Without the spokes, a wheel doesn't work. And I think for all of us, once we get in the wine industry, the juice is what starts us there, but it's not what keeps you there. If you're just interested in the juice, you'll never be in the wine industry because it's too hard. Restaurant business is too complicated. It's the stories. It's the people. It's the culture. You know, I am as waspy and white bread as any American could be. Family came here in 1640 to Massachusetts. I grew up in Texas. But my life has been about travel, and wine has taken me all over the world. And I just really wanted to try to bring that to more people. If a kid from Flower Mound, Texas can get off his ass and learn these things, become part of a culture, become integrated specifically into Italy, but I'm hoping to do that all over the world, why can't anybody else? Why can't you travel like that? And that's the whole goal of Sip Trip.
Love that. I've seen some really great teasers. The cinematography looks beautiful. I've been following your Instagram. Your camera guys are hilarious. I'm a little jealous that I haven't been on one of these trips with you because it looks awesome. But when's the first one going to be released?
In the fall of this year.
Fall of this year.
I don't have an exact date because I've learned a lot about, you know, web TV production, whatever you want to call it, it's a lot more complicated than I assumed. Just like everything, it's like I pitch this idea, shoot from the hip. It's this thing that's been in my head. It's a passion, and you know, you come up against some of the realities.
Just what are the realities? How does someone who has this idea, who did you go to help tape it, to help fund it? Just looking at it, like there's drone aerial footage, there's beautiful vineyard sites, you have a crew.
It's expensive.
It looks expensive. How did you put this all together?
I was at a conference in the winter, December of 2017, and I was talking to a friend of mine who happened to work for this PR agency, and I was like, I have this idea, I'm really trying to figure it out. And she's like, my boss is really good at figuring out how to get money for things. And I think you would like this idea. So we went to her boss. His name's Gino Colangelo. He runs Colangelo and Partners. It's a PR firm here in New York. And I pitched the idea. And he's like, I really like this. Let me talk to some people. So then he talked to some more people. And he brought in another partner who's based in Italy. So we formed our own little company, an LLC, like production company, of Gino, this woman, Marina Nedic, and I. And the goal was to talk to like Ford, Ely, importers, anybody, family, you know. So the money comes from all over the place, for good or for bad. And that's something I've learned too, is like, wow, this is one, it's really hard. My friend has done Kickstarter campaigns. So we looked at that. But since we're going to base all of this in Italy, we needed to get people over to Italy. So that's expensive. The interesting, once you're there, and just like you know, and this is what I tell everybody, you know, getting there is the expensive part. Being there, and specifically with wine travel gets you out of the cities. You become a part of the country, and you'll discover the coolest things you've ever seen in your life, unexpectedly most of the time, and it's inexpensive. We stayed at really nice places in the Marche for like 55 euro a night, which would be, what, 60 bucks a night? And I don't understand how Italians come here and stay for $350 a night in New York City. I couldn't afford that. That blows my mind. So, you know, getting the crew. So half the crew is Italian. And so we worked with kind of a fixer there, like our Italian producing partner knew someone. It's all connections. And then Gino knew our director and my co-producer's name's Rob Martinez. I'd done a video with him before and he's a stand-up comic. He's really funny. He's super creative. So he came on board and then he had a friend, Amanda Picote, who is a photographer and a videographer. And she came on board and then was off to the races.
So how big is your group?
So there's four people behind the camera, uh-huh. And there's 3 to 4 people in front of the camera. So VinePair is our media partner. So I met Adam Teeter and Keith Beavers, and you know, we talked the idea, and he was like, oh, I'm really interested in video content, and I'm curious about the show, and it'd be really neat to work together. So they've come on board, and I'm going to start writing for them, which is exciting, and do native content about the show and then have the show on the site as well. And then we also brought Soms to kind of like, the idea is kind of like with comedians and cars getting coffee, is there's the inside baseball part in the car. So we talk about wine culture, our expectations, what we learn. And then there's the show where we're like at restaurants, hotels, bars, eating, drinking, whatever, in vineyards. So you get part of the nerdy wine part, you get the cultural part. You know, we most recently visit a 5,500-year-old tomb in Sardinia, a Neolithic tomb. That's part of the cultural thing because of going to this town, Alghero, in northwestern Sardinia. Because of wine, we were able to go into this thing, and anybody can do it. You just have to go to the tourist, you know, website and hire a tour guide, and you get to do it. And you know, who wouldn't want to do that? And then you get to be in this awesome village, have stupid meals for little money, go to the beach, drink, and eat.
Sounds awful.
It is horrible.
Why would you want to do this? How many trips has it been?
Four.
And each time it's, how long is it?
It kept getting longer.
You're the only one I know who doesn't have a permanent residence in Italy who spends more time in Italy than I do.
I would love to. I'm not there yet.
Maybe we can share one together.
Yeah, you, me, and Shelley. That's what Shelley and I, that's part of IGNI. The whole idea for IGNI is to fund a home there.
Yes.
We spent about 60 days total between the four trips. Wow. We did over 10,000 kilometers.
Did you hit up every region?
Not every region, unfortunately. We only went to 11, which is 51% of the regions. We drove through almost all of them. So there's shots of everywhere. Mm-hmm. Except for the only place I don't think we drove through is Valdosta, which is...
I was just in Valdosta. Oh,
it's the only region I've never been to, and I really want to go.
It is beautiful, as you can imagine. But so if you visited Alto Piemonte, especially if you're like by Carema, where mm-hmm. Ferrando is, you're like 15 minutes from Valdosta.
I just need to get on it.
You need to get on it.
Yeah.
It's slacker. Really, it's amazing there. It's really nice. Yeah, you're a slacker.
Yeah, I'm a slacker. I'm my wife is literally, shout out to Shauna Leitis, the greatest woman on earth, because going into this whole year, I mean, without a partner like her, this couldn't be done. And, you know, I have a 5.5-year-old daughter, and I've been away a lot. And, you know, she understands that this is a lifetime opportunity, and she's been super gracious and awesome and supportive. When it gets really hard and I get sad, like the biggest challenge I didn't realize is how isolating it was to be on these trips, because I'm the producer, I'm the host, I'm the den mother. You know, I have to wrangle the crew, I have to wrangle the guests, I have to communicate with the people we're visiting, I have to drive the car. And I didn't realize how exhausting that would be and be happy all the time. And I'd call her and be like, I'm crying, this is so hard. And you don't get a lot of sympathy when people are like, I see your Instagram, you can shut up, you piece of crap. Go back to drinking wine and being in front of a camera. But it's hard. It's harder than I thought it would be.
How many wineries would you visit in a day?
The most we do is 2 a day. And then by the third trip, we figured out to get the right information, you can only do 1 a day. You know, you'd spend 8 to 12 hours with one family or estate. And the way we kind of broke it down in filming is like, I was like being in the vineyard because that's where it starts. There'd be the vineyard and the cantina part. So there'd always be some wine component. I always wanted a cultural component and I wanted a food component. So however that happened, be it I did a barbecue at one place. So they got me all the food, and this was with Planeta in Sicily. And we had all the food and I cooked for everybody else. And that was a ton of fun. using the local product and doing
whatnot. I'd love to see what you could do with a Piemontese beef brisket.
I've never had enough time to smoke a brisket there, but I've done Fasone, like bistecca langhetta kind of style, like big 4-inch Fasone beef. And it's interesting because the beef is less fatty. It just cooks totally differently, but it's delicious.
How do you go about choosing the producers you're going to profile?
So one of the ideas for this trip was I didn't want to have it be exclusionary. I on purpose wanted it to be this kind of big tent idea of wine. So part of the idea was to choose wineries that had much more distribution in the United States, because there's nothing worse than like watching a cooking show or talking to a wine person being like, oh, you can't get into there. You can't have this. I mean, that's such a dick move. And like, for the first time, I just wanted to be like, listen, these are really good wines. Some of them make a lot of wine. Some of them make medium amounts of wine. And some make small amounts of wine, but they have good distribution. So that was the kind of on-purpose thing. I wanted it to be very easy to find. Because also part of the goal is like on the website, once we get that going and the episodes come out, people can follow along. So they'll see where we went, who we were with, what restaurant we went to, what hotel we went to. So they can either recreate it at home. If there's a recipe, we met with a lot of chefs. So we'll get recipes from them, put those up on the website with the wines. So they can find the wines. Because I hate being exclusionary. I feel for us, we just have to have, you know, some people may not like the wines. You know, some of the Psalms that were on the trip didn't like the wineries we went to. And that I didn't care. It's more about the experience. You know, I don't like all wine, but I like all experience. And you know, all the places we went to, these families, even the companies, if they're owned by a big company, you know, taught us something. And at the end of the day, you know, I'd have to say like every winery we went to, there was one wine that either changed my mind, revalidated something, or something new that I'd never tried before.
Share with us a moment when your mind was changed. I think that's pretty interesting.
So at Selle in Mosca, the last winery we visited.
Huge winery in Sardinia,
the 500 hectares. Gigantic. Super interesting story. Didn't know. They were a nursery that started because of phylloxera in the late 1800s. They became one of the most important nurseries during that time period. And then they started making wine because they're like, oh, we have all these vines. We might as well make some wine. Their Cananao Reserva, which I hadn't had in years, is arguably delicious. Concrete fermentation, Boti, native yeast, certified organic for 5 years. The estate's been totally certified organic. The wine was delicious.
Checks all these boxes that
wine nerds want. But at the end of the day, the Psalm that was with me, who wasn't like into anything else, she like stopped and she was like, "This is damn good." And I think that for me is something that we as people who are deep in the industry sometimes forget or poo-poo, like either big importers or big distributors, with big distributors, a lot of times for rightful reasons, it's just the logistics part that always pisses us off. It's not the wine, but yeah, it opened my eyes. And I think the big thing Sip Trip has taught me just not to be judgy about anything. Just be open to an experience, let it come to you. You can like it or not, but you know, the one thing about this travel and travel in general for me, your life can end tomorrow. Someone can take all your money. Your house can burn down. All these things can be taken away, but the one thing that can never be taken away from you is experience.
Were there any themes that kept coming up when you visited wineries, even in very different areas? Was there any struggles or...
Climate change. That was across the board. Everyone talked about climate change. And then the other thing talked about is Trump. Everyone asked us, is Trump going to put tariffs on our wine? Which may happen very soon. But 100% was climate change. Everyone talked about it. Everyone explained their issues with it, explained the good. Like, you know, it was interesting. You'd meet someone who'd be like, well, it's a little better because our grapes get riper, but the long-term damage is not good. I mean, they were like talking like in the now, our wines are better because of it. But all of them were just like, something has to be done with no answers, of course. I mean,
everyone had different ways of dealing with it. Yeah. The thing about a vineyard, it's like a vine is like a tree, right? It's not like a crop where you move one place, move to another, and you're kind of stuck there.
Pun intended, rooted.
You're rooted, exactly. So have you found that people are like training the vines differently because that's something you can adjust, buying
canopy management?
Canopy management, yeah.
A few estates we went to are planting trees in their vineyard, which is an old practice. Super, super old, like cool. Roman times.
Shade the vineyards.
Shade the vineyards. I went to a producer, this is not with Sip Trip, but hopefully I can do Sip Trip and Champagne, but I went to a producer who was doing that as well for their vines. But anything that they can do in terms of, yeah, of canopy management, water is becoming obviously a big issue. That's something that I'm most interested in talking about is within the wine community. I don't think anybody's addressed it yet, but is water usage, not just in if you irrigate your vines or not, but how much water you use in your winery. Are you recycling that water? Because gray water usage, you can just pump it back, filter it once, and reuse it again. Because there's some wineries, like we went to Caldo Bosco, and they put their grapes in a bath. It's a lot of water. And I asked them, they're like, oh, we recycle the water. I was like, how many times? You know, it takes a lot of water to clean tanks. And water is the next big frontier in terms of what we need as
humans.
They
put their grapes in a bath. So they like to kill off any of the yeast?
I still don't understand it. But it's impressive if you like big machines.
Yeah, I bet. What else surprised you during this trip or the trips?
To be honest, there's a lot. One, it surprised me is that when you rent a car and you drive a lot, you eventually hurt your car. Not because you think it's a rental, but like every, like driving in Italy is a, it's not the stress of the other people. It's like all of a sudden you'll be driving and the road gets super narrow and you end up scratching your car, which is frustrating. So always get the full insurance, even though it's a little more expensive.
Yes. And if you have an Amex and Amex gives you insurance on your car when you travel, Italy is one of the countries it doesn't cover. I learned the hard way.
Exactly.
So just get the full insurance.
Get the full insurance. It may be $31 a day, but it'll save you a lot of money. You know, you and I have worked and are deeply embedded into the Italian wine culture and country itself. And it didn't surprise me, but the beauty and the reason I keep going back to Italy is the hospitality. I mean, so many people I've never met in my life call them. They'd show up at 5 a.m. We're like, oh, we want to do sunrise in your vineyard. And they'd be like, awesome. They'd be out there with cups of espresso for the crew and us. And they didn't know us from Adam. That's the beauty of Italy, is just this warmth and hospitality. Even if they fake it, it was great.
Where do you think, where in Italy are things really like happening right now? Or is the wine culture like really changing, moving forward? Or is there exciting new things going on?
I mean, I think Italy to me is, I always been, for the past few years, been calling it the newest, oldest wine producing region in the world. I think there's so much across the peninsula. Every region has really interesting things happening in it. Obviously, Lazio is super cool. Places where young people can afford to buy land is, and this is kind of my mantra across the world. So like around Madrid, so the Vinos Madrid, the kind of area that was just used for bulk wine for a long time, has become a hotbed of really interesting old vine Garnacha from young producers doing kind of interesting Naturalista stuff.
Like Commander G.
Exactly.
Good example.
And then, but like Lazio, Emilia Romagna, Calabria, Basilicata, some interesting stuff out of Puglia. You know, I'm very bullish on Sicily, not just Etna, like experiencing other things in Sicily was super, super cool. Obviously,
like Western Sicily, right? Yeah. Where you, in the past, there's no one. I mean, Marco de Bartoli was the only quality producer there.
I think, yeah, if you can find places where the land is cheap, you'll find interesting stuff. Is it good yet? Maybe, maybe not. But wine, like you were talking about in the vineyards, wine is the biggest oil tanker of agriculture. It moves so slowly. You have to think 10, 15 years down the line. Nothing changes immediately. So it's these experimentations with these younger growers that I find most interesting.
Is there something you think that unites what these younger growers are doing that's exciting, or are they very individual?
I think another cool thing across the globe that I'm seeing is younger people are just more connected in general. The social aspect of it is greater. And they build these communities themselves and they share information more than the previous generations. So things move a bit quicker and they're also just a ton of fun at the end of the day.
Yeah, they are super fun. Is there anything else you want to share about Sip Trip or Igni or any other project that you're working on?
Sip Trip's coming at you. I hope people like it.
I'm confident they will like it.
Working on it.
I've liked everything I've seen about it so far with everything you're sharing on Instagram and these sort of teaser videos. Can our listeners watch any of the teaser videos? Will they be up?
Yes. So if you go to, we have a YouTube channel, Sip Trip with Jeff Porter, which is weird. It's like funny. There's a t-shirt now with my name on it, which is odd. My kid walks around with a t-shirt. That's, I think, is pretty funny. The YouTube channel, the Instagram, which is Sip Trip Italy as well. And then just to realize it's so funny, even though like we have 4 camera people, like the thing I've learned going back to this is it's still a low budget. Even though the sum of money is like bigger than I ever could have imagined. Making TV is super expensive. And the people involved in it are so talented. Like the things that we learned. You asked, what's outside of wine? Things that I learned. Focal length, aperture, lighting, sound. Our sound guy, Nicolo, who's the curly Italian on the little videos where we do Italian conjugation. He's a nut and I love him, but he's like, Jeff, we cannot do the sound here. And it's so funny. You're like, why? He's like, the humming, tell them to turn off whatever it is. So we'd like go into places and turn off refrigerators. You know, we'd tell people to shut up. We'd be in a cafe learning how to make something. We'd have to turn off the music. It's all those little things that are really, really interesting.
Well, I think you're the perfect person to do this. You have the extensive wine knowledge. I always love chatting with you about wine. But also, you're just like the most fun, entertaining guy. So I cannot wait for this to come out.
Oh, I appreciate it.
In the fall, at some point.
In the fall, sometime soon. As they would say in Italian, speriamo, which means hopefully.
Magari.
Grazie.
That's our show for today. Thanks so much for listening to In the Drink. You can follow me on Instagram at Joe Campanelli for updates on the show, photos of what I'm drinking, and the occasional Pitbull pick. You can also email me at info@inthedrinkpod.com. And please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. In the Drink is produced by Jessamine Molly. Special thanks goes to Renny Lopez for our theme music. And last but by no means least, thank you for listening. Join us next week for another episode of In the Drink.